Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and we've got a quite a day to talk about today. We've got Elon Musk and Tesla pushing back against the SEC, and we have the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, NHTSA, opening up an investigation into Tesla's autopilot for phantom braking. Got some negative headlines from Consumer Reports. We do actually have a little bit of good news out of Giga Texas and a couple other items as well. Not many positives in the market today. Tesla finishing down 5.1% to $876.35. The NASDAQ was down 2.9% on the day. All right, let's start off with the court action. So what we've got here is a letter today from a lawyer representing Tesla and Elon Musk to the court that ruled over the SEC and Tesla slash Elon settlement over the going private tweet. Now, as we recall, that settlement ruled that Tesla and Elon both owed $20 million to resolve that case. There was no admission of guilt or anything like that. Elon had to agree to step down as chairman of the board for Tesla and had to agree to those restrictions on some of his public communication, which we've talked about many times. As for that $40 million, that was supposed to be redistributed to Tesla shareholders. I do not recall getting my check for that, and it's because I didn't, neither did you. This letter reads, quote, simply stated, the SEC has failed to comply with its promise to pay Tesla shareholders the $40 million it collected as part of the settlement in these cases, and that it purports to be holding for them. Instead, it has been devoting its formidable resources to endless, unfounded investigations into Mr. Musk and Tesla. We are respectfully requesting that the court schedule a conference to address why the SEC has failed to distribute these funds to shareholders, but has chosen to spend its energy and resources investigating Mr. Musk's and Tesla's compliance with the consent decree by issuing subpoenas unilaterally without court approval. When Mr. Musk and Tesla agreed to the consent decrees in 2018, Tesla was a less mature company. They elected to resolve the matter without admitting or denying wrongdoing relative to the SEC's dubious legal theories because protracted litigation was not in the interests of the company and its shareholders and stood to jeopardize the company's financing, i.e. the proverbial gun of losing company financing was pointed at their heads. My clients did so in reliance on certain promises made by the SEC, in particular that the SEC would distribute the $20 million from Mr. Musk and the $20 million from Tesla to Tesla shareholders. They also say that they believed that the settlement would involve the court in any monitoring over perceived compliance issues going forward. So, as said before, Tesla believes that the SEC is acting unilaterally in areas that the court should be involved in. Probably the most recent example of this we learned in the 10K annual filing, where Tesla had disclosed that on November 16th, the SEC had issued a subpoena in regards to this settlement. So, Tesla getting tired of it. I don't know how strong of a case that piece of it is, but obviously they're also complaining about the lack of distribution of those funds, and that seems like a pretty obvious problem. Tesla cites the SEC's own rules of practice, which state that, quote, unless ordered otherwise, the Division of Enforcement shall submit a proposed plan no later than 60 days after the respondent has turned over the funds or other assets, end quote. So, to protect investors, the SEC takes $20 million from Tesla, $20 million from Elon Musk, sits on that money for 3 years while Tesla stock increases 15 times. If that money had actually been redistributed to Tesla shareholders like it was supposed to be, then a lot of that probably would have been reinvested in Tesla. That could be worth up to $600 million today, rather than the roughly $35 million that it would be worth now due to the inflation over that period of time. Great job having shareholders back on that one. And then during this whole period of time, continues to be a regulatory threat, probably causing just as much volatility and loss of valuation as what they were trying to supposedly protect from. If investors don't understand what Elon Musk is at this point, maybe they can protect their own assets and not invest in Tesla. Pretty simple. The letter continues on to write that, quote, worst of all, the SEC seems to be targeting Mr. Musk and Tesla for unrelenting investigation, largely because Mr. Musk remains an outspoken critic of the government. The SEC's outsized efforts seem calculated to chill his exercise of First Amendment rights rather than to enforce generally applicable laws in even-handed fashion, end quote. The letter concludes by noting that it's unsurprising that despite these serial investigations, some of which Tesla says involved one investigation being closed only for another one to be opened at the exact same time, there's been no finding of any wrongdoing. They say enough is enough. Mr. Musk and Tesla write in the hope that the court can bring the SEC's harassment campaign to an end while ensuring the SEC finally delivers at long last on its commitment to Tesla shareholders and this court. So we'll see what comes of it. Obviously, I've talked before about how a lot of these investigations haven't really seemed to make a ton of sense to me, not being a lawyer, of course, but those restrictions that Elon agreed to left a lot of wiggle room, and I'm sure that's why he was okay agreeing to them. Do I sometimes think Elon pushes it? Do I sometimes not agree with things that Elon tweets? All the time. I mean, today, perfect example of that. There was a meme that was in poor taste. Elon ended up deleting it. But sometimes things like that are going to negatively impact people's perception of Tesla, of Elon, and make the target on their back even larger. And that's a little bit tangential to what we're talking about here with the SEC stuff. But on that front, I am glad to see that Tesla is pushing back for the rights that they believe that they have. All right, from one government organization over to another, moving on from the SEC over to NHTSA. NHTSA yesterday has opened up a preliminary investigation into Tesla's autopilot due to unexpected activation of braking system, otherwise known as phantom braking. So the Office of Defects Investigation has received 354 complaints on this over the last 9 months. Now, I think we all understand that phantom braking does happen. There seems to be this narrative that that has increased since Tesla has gone to vision only. That has not been my experience at all. I really haven't noticed any difference, and it's very infrequent for me, but I don't know, maybe other people have different experiences. Regardless, what I think is the most important thing here is that out of these 354 complaints, there have been zero reports of crashes or fires, zero injuries, and of course, zero fatalities. So yes, phantom braking might be a little bit jarring, might be a little bit scary, feels unsafe, but no crashes reported on it. Now, here's where things get a little bit tricky because obviously Tesla's not just intentionally slamming on the brakes. They're doing that when they think that there is something that they need to do that for. It's a false positive, and ideally, you're not going to have any false positives, but we also don't have level 5 autonomous driving vehicles yet. And in the meantime, you'd really want to have a bias towards not ignoring false positives because some of them are not going to be false. They're going to be true positives where you do need to stop fast. And unlike a false positive that's causing an uncomfortable braking event but no crashes, there are true positives that are likely preventing crashes, but we're not going to see a NHTSA report on that number. That's an unknown. Now, I'm sure to reduce phantom braking events, to comply with any, you know, government pressure, Tesla could easily require higher confidence in events like that that are causing phantom braking, but doing that is going to increase the risk of it not stopping when it needs to stop. Now, obviously, this is just a preliminary evaluation. It is an investigation. This will eventually determine if NHTSA feels like a recall is warranted. But pending the results of that investigation, unfortunately, based on other actions we have seen taken, as well as the overall narrative surrounding this topic, it seems like the preferred direction would be to resolve the apparent problem that doesn't seem to be a huge safety risk versus the less apparent, less tangible safety benefit that is causing the issue. Now, if phantom braking was causing a lot of accidents, that's a much more difficult case to make, again, because of some of the intangible nature of the benefit. All we have to go off of is autopilot safety as a whole, which we have very limited data on, but we do have some data, and that data did show that Tesla vehicles with autopilot on or with autopilot off and active safety features on, that group in combination, which would cover every mile driven, because autopilot is off in one of those groups, was getting in accidents less frequently than Tesla vehicles without active safety features on or without autopilot on. So net-net, the feature set is pretty clearly a positive to safety. I believe that Tesla would design it the safest way that they possibly can. There are strong incentives for them to do so. And perhaps just as importantly, very little incentive for them not to do so. But then we have NHTSA coming in here and potentially putting a finger on the scale of that incentive system, changing it from the natural occurrence of overall safety of the fleet into both a combination of safety and whatever is going to appease regulators and make them think that it's safer. I hope that makes sense. I think overall, this is just like a natural occurrence where we can observe that Tesla thinks from first principles and others really just do not think that way. Tesla looking at the entirety of the problem and optimizing what they can around that versus someone else focusing in on one singular element. So we'll just have to see where this goes. I think previously I would have been a little bit more confident in NHTSA coming to a good conclusion based on the overall set of data, the entirety of the situation, but some of the recent actions definitely have made me less confident in that outcome. And I guess the last thing I'll say on this is that I do think that there is targeting risk here. Some people will write that off and say that, oh, if they make Tesla change something, they'll make all other manufacturers change that too. I don't think that's the case because anywhere where Tesla is differentiated, that is an opportunity to isolate on Tesla and target them from a regulation standpoint. Now, obviously, hopefully that is not what's going to happen ever, but just like I talked about in that interview on Galley's channel on Hyperchange, that is honestly one of my biggest concerns just based on how the United States seems to interact with Tesla and view Tesla. Anyway, let's move on. We do have some positive things to talk about here too, and the highlight of that is Giga Texas. So we've talked about seeing some vehicles on Car Carrier, we've talked about seeing some vehicles in the factory, now we're seeing some vehicles in a lot outside of the factory. The lot itself, by the way, still under construction, so it looks like, I don't know, about 100 Model Ys out here. Day after day, we just continue to get more and more positive signs there from Giga Texas. Now, what I thought was kind of interesting with these Model Ys is that they do have the Gemini wheels, so non-performance vehicles here, versus the performance vehicles that we had seen on the Car Carrier. I would think at first that Tesla would focus on just building one variant, and based on the sheer number here, it would seem to be non-performance. So then what are those performance vehicles doing? I don't know, maybe being sent away for crash testing for the performance for when they are ready to build it? I don't know. Perplexing stuff there, but Either way, still very exciting to see this number of vehicles sitting outside the factory, and should continue to be very interesting to monitor that activity in the coming days. These shots, by the way, were from Jeff Roberts. Next, we've got a nice update out of China from Jay in Shanghai. He is reporting that Tesla China is now offering a retrofit to upgrade to an electric tailgate for the Model 3 that did not previously have that feature. That'll make it interactive with the user interface, and it will carry a 3-year warranty. The price on this in China is the equivalent of $630. Right now, this just is in China, but presumably and hopefully this would carry over to other regions as well. All right, next up here, I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but did get some headlines today. Consumer Reports has replaced the Model 3 with the Mustang Mach-E as their top pick for electric vehicles for 2022. They say that the reliability data that they've collected so far on the Mach-E has showed very few problems. And as we have talked about before, Consumer Reports, just in general, not a fan of how Tesla is handling autonomy. They want Tesla's driver monitoring system to be way more aggressive. If you're a person that can pay attention yourself, well, then I think you're probably likely to prefer Tesla's driver assistance features rather than Ford Mach-E. But Consumer Reports has their own particular set of preferences. It's also worth noting, as many people have, that the Ford Foundation is one of the most significant contributors to Consumer Reports. All right, last couple of items here. First, we've got an update on emission standards. As we had talked about before, under the Trump administration, there had been a rollback on the capability of individual states to set their own emission standards in favor of just one unified national standard. States had pushed back on that, arguing that there were no grounds to make that sort of an overarching ruling at a federal level. After President Biden was elected, he asked the EPA and NHTSA to look into this, consider restoring that waiver for those states. And the EPA said this week that they are working to finalize a decision on that waiver and expects to rule on the issue in the near future. Apparently, sources are saying that that could happen as early as this week. Some of the reporting on that has been a little bit confusing, almost like it's a done deal already, but the strong expectation is that that will be granted, that waiver, allowing states to return to setting their own standards. Good for those emission standards and potentially a little bit of good news for Tesla's regulatory credit value. All right, last item then, I just wanted to clarify from yesterday's conversation, we talked about that lithium supply contract. I noted I wasn't sure how much of that lithium spodumene made it into a final battery. We got some help on that in the comments. Turns out it's only about 15% or so. So rather than this being a contract that could supply lithium for 1.3 to 2 million vehicles, it would be more like 200,000 to 300,000. So I wanted to make sure to clarify that, and thank you for the help on that. So that is it for today then. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast, and we'll see you tomorrow for the Friday, February 18th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.